This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome back, folks. The Biden administration... interpretation of Title IX, a 1972 law that bars sex discrimination in schools that receive federal funding, was released last week. Title IX is best known for ushering in equal treatment for women in sports, but it also governs how schools handle complaints of sexual harassment and assault, which has been a big, big issue on college campuses. Many have referred to the way that it was conducted years ago was really a kangaroo court. The Biden administration is now deploying the regulation to formalize its standing view that sex discrimination includes discrimination based on gender identity as well as sexual orientation. Here to talk to us about the implication of same is Harry Rosenberg, former U.S. attorney. Harry, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Neil. It's always good to talk to you.
Harry, this rewrite by the Biden administration has far-reaching implications, does it not?
It absolutely does, Neil. I will confess I've not gone through all 1,600 pages of the new rules that were just issued on Friday, although I expect that you have studied them all and know them by heart. But it is
you or anyone else in America. Trust me, I'm not sure the administration themselves have gone through the 1,600 pages. Go ahead.
I will say, but you're correct in your general statement that it is considerably broadened Title IX as to what it used to be just before these rules were issued, and certainly it's expanded it. Title IX beyond the interpretation given by the Trump administration and the Secretary of Education under President Trump.
When you have something like gender identity that is fluid, I guess that would be a safe characterization, right? Because gender identity encompasses today I could identify as a male and tomorrow I could identify as a female.
I'm not going to touch that with Newell.
No, but I mean, but it's true. It could, right? I mean, because it's not necessarily that you do anything else. It's just how I want to identify as. And I guess my question is, how do you craft laws in protecting that when that identity can be as fluid as anybody wants to make it out to be?
Well, I think that's going to be a challenge for the school districts and the universities, if they are all heeding these new Title IX rules. It's not just gender identification, as you know, but the new rules also include prohibiting any discrimination, not just based upon sexual harassment, but sexual orientation and even sex characteristics and sex stereotypes. So it's hard to know what all the characteristics are, and it does become a fluid situation, which the universities and the school districts, numbering over 23,000 in the United States, are going to have to contend with if these rules withstand legal challenges.
So, for example, 10 states right now require transgender students to use bathrooms and locker rooms that align with their biological sex identified at birth. Obviously, these provisions would disrupt, and on those universities that receive federal funds could no longer adhere to those state statutes, right?
Absolutely correct. And I think that's precisely the reason that the superintendent of education for Louisiana, Dr. Brumley, issued a letter yesterday to all the school districts telling them that they should not heed these new rules, that there will inevitably be legal challenges by the state of Louisiana and presumably other states challenging these new rules under Title IX, Bill.
So who actually has the authority? I mean, is this something that is reserved to Congress, or these are administrative rules that can be developed by the Department of Education that characterize what are protected classes?
Well, as you know, and many of your listeners, I'm sure, are aware, Title IX of the Education Amendments was enacted back in 1972. But these rules also are fluid and frequently based upon the discretion of the Secretary of Education. Under President Trump, Betsy DeVos, who was Secretary of Education, narrowed the definition of sexual misconduct, for example, provided the accused individuals with rights that did not exist before she enacted her rules. And now we see under President Biden those rules being eviscerated, if not eliminated, if these rules, as I said, remain in force. And that's what we're going to have to see. That's the question du jour.
So those that are accused of discriminatory conduct under the previous administration, their appreciation was that if you used a standard in all other disciplinary proceedings at your university, you had to use that same standard, whether it be clear and convincing evidence or preponderance of the evidence, which is a lesser standard, you had to use the same one. Now, the Biden administration is saying we want to opt for the lower standard, preponderance of the evidence. And it seemed to me that under Betsy DeVos, they really reworked and got closer to more of an adversarial system as it related to accused of discriminatory behavior on campuses where they could have an actual hearing. Now it looks like they're even retreating from that to a certain extent.
I think that's exactly right, Newell. Under the new rules, those hearings are not required, would not be required. The standards for defining sexual misconduct have broadened, so it does not have to be so severe and pervasive as to deny a person equal access to a school educational program. And those are the types of situations that have markedly changed or would markedly change under these new rules that broaden Title IX and certainly provide additional protection for individuals, not just regarding gender identification and, as you mentioned, sexual orientation or sex characteristics, but also delving into off-campus activities as well as protecting individuals in domestic violence situations on campus or pregnancy.
But they didn't go so far as to address athletics, did they? Obviously,
<No. laughs>
that is a much more contentious topic. And I guess because we're in the midst of an election, no can do, we're not going to touch that.
I can't say it's a no can do because we're in the midst of an election, but I think that makes sense, Newell. It is something where they've kicked that can down the road, as the saying goes, and I think it likely would come up again if Biden is reelected. It will never surface if former President Trump is reelected. So we'll have to wait and see exactly what's going to happen there. But it's going to depend upon so much is going to depend upon who's at the wheel, so to speak, in the White House. But as you mentioned a moment ago, it's really going to depend upon who's driving the Department of Education, Newell, and how these two sets of rules are going to interact. I mean, Superintendent Brumley said, look, we already have laws on the books that are at odds with these new rules, and therefore no one should enforce them. He got out a letter in amazingly short order yesterday, just one work day after the rules were issued on Friday, and told all the school districts, do not heed these, talk to your legal counsel, and there will be a legal fight on these rules, you can bet.
You know what's going to be interesting, Harry, is that a number of universities require you to live on campus. Some now are even going to a four-year requirement of living on campus. Many are 3 of 4 years, allowing you to study abroad and not having that requirement in your junior year. But this new interpretation of Title IX by the Biden administration really kind of complicates this, because you no longer will have like single-sex dorms or anything else. Your bunk mate, or however you want to refer to it, could be whomever. And what if you decide that's not what I want, and you're compelling me to live on campus, and you're limiting the choices that I may have as to what I want my living arrangements to be? I see this as, in many respects, of a huge Pandora's box being opened.
I think that's right. I mean, it's going to be a number of issues besides just dormitory living. It's going to be the whole question of how a university responds or how a school district responds if that entity is receiving federal funds and the smallest amount, Neil. And if they're receiving those federal funds, that triggers Title IX's application to that school district or that university, which could mean large dollars awarded by the complaining party, perhaps attorney's fees, depending upon the circumstances, and the award of expert fees if there's a lawsuit filed. So I think that's the stark comparison between what we saw in the prior administration and what we're seeing proposed now under President Biden's Department of Education.
And I mean, this gets to almost as kind of really picayunish in some respect, that if you refer to an individual by utilizing the wrong pronoun, that could be under this adoption by the Biden administration of these amendments to Title IX, that could be discriminatory conduct, could it not?
It absolutely could. And that was precisely one example that Dr. Brumley used in his letter to all the school system leaders, the BSEE board, and all the school boards, telling them that, wait a minute now, we have to use the right pronouns. We have to use the right names. We that are selected by that individual, irrespective of biological origin. And he has said, at least in his letter that he wrote to President Biden and to all the school districts throughout the state, is that that is the type of thing that is offensive to not only the current laws in Louisiana, but the laws that the state legislature are considering and have enacted.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this ends up. The implementation date is August 1st, according to Cardona, the head of department, Federal Department of Education. And I guess that's why there's this huge pushback and response at this point in time. And I got to imagine in very short order, there'll be legal action taken.
I think that's right. It's no surprise that the superintendent of education has copied the governor, has copied the attorney general of this state, as well as all the school districts and the BSEE board, which I think presages the fact that we are going to see litigation in the very short order, given the turnaround date of August 1st.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the beginning of this next school session. A lot of unanswered questions. I think students are going to be wondering about a whole lot of different things that may or may not go on these school campuses this next session, for sure. Harry, as always, we truly appreciate your time, your insight. I fully anticipate that you will read all 1,600 pages.
Well, I was about to say, Neil, I'm going back to read the remaining 1,500, but it is a lot to digest. But I think the general consequences, as you mentioned at the outset, are significant. And we'll just have to wait and see whether state law or federal law are going to govern the universities and the school districts throughout the country.
And I'm sure as each day goes by, there's going to be a new revelation about what's actually within those 1,600 pages, for sure. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
No, thank you, Neil. You too. It's always a pleasure. Thanks.
That's Harry Rosenberg, former U.S. attorney. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Folks, the other day I thanked Senator Pat Connick, a Republican from Jefferson Parish, for coming out and standing against Senate Bill 482, which would basically rewrite the state public records law by exempting a lot of different records at all levels of government, both state government and local government. And I praised him for exhibiting credible leadership and coming out and being one of the few and the only one that I know of that has publicly come out and said, no can do. This is not a good bill. We need to think about this before we go down this path. And he joins us now, Pat Connick, state senator. Pat, welcome to the show.
Hey, Neil, how you doing?
Pat, I sincerely mean it. I thank you for having the guts to step up. A lot of folks, you know, the governor's been big behind this bill, and a lot of folks are not willing to stand up, but you did. Why?
It's the right thing to do. You know, I really respect the governor. He's trying to do some good things, but in this instance, I think it's misplaced, and the public has a right to know where its money's being spent and who's spending it and how it's being spent. And it's not our money. It's public money, so there's a balance we need to strike to protect his family, and I think that can be done. But just to have a blanket public records request, you know, thrown out and hidden is not good, especially in Louisiana.
A lot of people may not realize there's a provision in this bill that exempts to any record of the office of governor pertaining to the schedule of the governor or the governor's spouse or child that contains security details that, if made public, may impair the safety of the governor, his spouse, or his child. I don't think a lot of people have a problem with that. I kind of do have a little bit of a problem with the schedule of the governor, but you know, the reality is you are a public servant. You run for office. You know that the public has a right to know. But when it comes to the security of your wife and your children, I get it, right?
Yeah, and I have no problem with that portion of the bill, but that's the only area that I'm okay with. You know, elected officials should not hide the facts or end the truth from the public. Like I said, we deal with public money, and it's public policy, and it's because it's public, the public has the right to know. Now, I think the author saying that, you know, she wants to protect the pre-deliberative communications, you know, versus the barrage of frivolous public records requests. And she sees things coming from AI, but you're going to have those frivolous requests, but otherwise you're going to have the good ones too that are going to shed light on some things. So you got to take the good with the bad, and you can't shut down at the whole system because of some frivolous request you're going to get once in a while.
Pat, let's hone in on a real life example. You've been around up there in Baton Rouge for a long time. Typically, you know, your agency heads are the ones that implement a whole lot as it relates to what's going on in state government, right? What would be exempt from the Public Records Act, I believe, under this bill would be when a governor calls and enters a deliberative process with an agency head about, let's just say, let's use DOTD. I'm just pulling this out of the sky. About improvements or the placing of a state roadway, right? And where it's going to go. Meanwhile, you have a constituent who's donated plenty of money to you, the governor, that is. And it's almost as if under this bill, none of those communications would come would be available to the public at all. And we would never know, you know, why he's speaking on behalf of a location of a state highway to be somewhere. And we could never connect the dots to, you know, that this could be a political payoff or a contribution that's been made. Whether or not it's legal or not is not important. It's whether or not the public has a right to know. Would that be an right exaggeration of a scenario or no?
No, that'd be a perfect scenario. It's, you know, right now, if a request is made, we have to respond to it. Our departments have to respond to it, the Senate, the House, the governor's office. If this bill passes, if a request is made, you're going to, they can say, well, that's part of the process. You don't get it. So you have no idea what took place, why it took place. And it's a public issue that needs to be, you know, be out there. You know, I've learned from my years up here, when you shed light and sunlight on issues, if it's an issue, if it's a good issue, it's going to grow. It's going to be okay. But if it's a bad issue, if it's some nefarious stuff going on, they're going to hide. They're going to run. So, you know, it's important that we keep that those lines of communication open, and the public can have access to these records that are so vital to the state and to how we do business here. So, and I think we're getting pressure. We're up from the public, and I praise you guys and the newspaper and the radio, because talking to my colleagues in the Senate, I don't see this bill moving in a way forward in the manner as it's set up right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the provision simply says the provisions of this chapter shall not apply to any records reflecting advisory opinions, recommendations, and deliberations comprising part of a process by which governmental decisions and policies are formulated. But what happens if you don't end? Yeah, but what happens if you don't end up in an end product?
Then you don't get it.
And you know as well as I, how many really successfully make it from beginning through end in a process? Not many at all, right? I mean, so there's a whole body of stuff that's going on up there that the public just doesn't have, wouldn't have a right to know about.
It's way too broad, and I think the rank and file public sees this, and they are raising their voices. And I had a meeting with there's a group Elevate that Julie Stokes had up here, a bunch of women who are professionals, and you know, I had to address them and I talked to them about the bill. I said I'm against this bill, and they gave me a round of applause. They were against. I mean, everybody is who's paying attention to this is basically against it. So we got to just keep the pressure on it and make it narrow a scope as much as possible to just apply to his family and then move on. The other thing new is there's another bill out there, 502, that says if you make a public records request, they can get your information, make sure you're a Louisiana citizen, and whose entity is asking. Right now you don't have to do that, but if you make a request and 502 passes, you got to give them all your information. And if that passes with 482, that companion bill, they get all the information on you, and you get nothing. So that's the scary part about what's going on with these two bills. So it's just not one bill, it's two bills.
Well, and that's there just to cause a chilling effect, right, in folks that are requesting. I mean, because all that does is empower members of government to go out and browbeat individuals, whoever they may be, that are asking for these public records.
It's scary. I mean, it's really scary. But I don't mind standing up and saying this is bringing to everybody's attention that this is not good for our state. And hopefully we can work with the governor to narrow it down to where it needs to be and move forward on it. We've got to get this past us and move forward.
But in all honesty, when I hear what he's saying, how can you narrow this down? I mean,
but just apply to his family.
You know, he wants to just demonize the left, right? As it relates to saying that they're the ones that are utilizing this in a way that they're weaponizing the Public Records Act. And the other day, Pat, I made the observation. Right now, Republicans in Washington are fighting for more light to shine on public records. They're making a bunch of FOIA requests of the Biden administration, and they're complaining that the Biden administration is standing in the way of coming forward with these records. And they're delaying as long as 18, 24, 36 months. How do you square this up?
I mean, but
I ask you, you know, what? Are there any other Republicans that have publicly revealed that they're opposed to this bill? Because I haven't been able to find it.
You know, I'm walking through the building this morning, I talked to about five or six members, senators that I came across, and they said they're against it. So the fact that they're not being public doesn't mean that there's not opposition growing against these bills, because we know it's bad. This is a bad bill. It's not good for the state, and you know, it will not go out the way it's written now. So, but we'll see how.
Well, one of the reasons that I praised you is because you are the only person that I know of that stepped up, and this is an example of being part of the deliberative process, right? You've gone public and taken a stand and let everybody know where you are.
Listen, why not? It's the right thing to do. And I put this on my Facebook page and told folks to call their senator, call their rep, call anybody to make you aware this bill is out here. And I have no problem with that. And because we're dealing with public money, public information, it's not our private money. It's your money. It's the taxpayers' money. And it's going to be a pain, you know, to deal with some of these requests, but it's something that has to be done. It's part of being, you know, what we face doing government. So you can't just stop everything because you get some bad actors. You got to deal with the bad actors and keep doing the right thing.
Yeah, you know, and I've been on both sides of this issue, right? And I think you probably have, too, as a lawyer, right, in dealing with public records requests. And you understand both sides and the difficulty of it. But I think your observation is that we have to keep things and maintain balance. And this bill would be a total disruption to the balance of interest, right?
Exactly. You know, in my private practice as a lawyer, you know, I just recently made a request to a school board for records on their mandatory reporting policy that was effective in 1990. They said they didn't have it, but I found a case involving the school board that was prosecuted by the DA up in St. Tammany Parish. I sent a FOIA request to the DA up in Plaquemines, and I got all the records that were saved from the school board from that case that pertained to mandatory reporting of teachers. So even though the school board didn't have it, the DA's office had it in their file. So this is good stuff. We got to keep that type of ability to get these records. And when I got those records, I was able to prove my case and help this young lady who was hurt. While she was a student up at North Shore School. So.
Yeah, I mean, where do you think this is going to end? I mean, the governor has gone on statewide radio and he's been, trying to gather support for this. Obviously, I guess he's reading the tea leaves that the public is not really warm and fuzzy with this bill at the present time.
Yeah, I haven't spoken to him about this, but he's been very active in other, when there's some other issues involving, like the gun battle we had. And he calls you, he talks to you, and I explain my position to him, and he, listens, and you work it out. And this is going to be the same way. I have faith that this is going to change, and this is going a little bit too far, and I don't think he's going to have the support that he needs to get it passed in a manner that they want it passed. But that's the process. You work back and forth. The bill's not finished. We're deliberating. And we're making sure that the deliberation is known to the public.
Absolutely. I want to thank you again for your open, honest approach and your credible leadership. And I know a lot of people, I've heard from a lot of folks that appreciate the stance that you've taken as well.
Yeah, it's easy to do. Have everybody out there call their state reps, call their senators and say they're against it. And they can make a change.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Senator Pat Connick from Jefferson Parish. We truly appreciate your service, and have a great week.
Thank you, Neil.
That's Senator Pat Connick, folks. We will be right back. Stay with us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Ready to go party? Now's your chance to win a pair of tickets to Jazz Fest. Today's password is Poboy, P-O-B-O-Y. That's Poboy. Now go to WWL.com/contest and register to win. It is really easy, folks, and you don't want to miss your chance to win Jazz Fest tickets plus round-trip Jazz Fest Express shuttle passes. Those are great as well. WWL is giving away a pair every day this week. All you have to do is listen to Tommy, me, Scoot, or Sports Talk for the Jazz Fest password of the day to see amazing artists like Foo Fighters, Neil Young, Bonnie Raitt, Queen Latifah, Hozier, Greta Van Fleet, Trombone Shorty, and more. Good luck and happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. And just want to remind you guys that I am going to be out there this Friday from Chili Gentilly out of Jazz Fest. A who's who at the fest. We'll visit restaurateurs, food vendors, John Ed Labor, the creator of crawfish bread. They set out Jazz Fest last year, but they're back by popular demand this year. No surprise there for sure. A lot of folks miss that. We'll also talk to artists, vendors, crafts village, marketplaces, Native American village. You name it. We're going to have them on. We'll talk. We'll take you, behind the scenes for insights that you don't get anywhere else. So don't miss our show live from the Jazz and Heritage Festival Friday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And it's all thanks to my good friends and good folks at Miller Lite, Taste Like Miller Time, and WWL. All right, folks, we'll be right back in just a few moments to check in with Scoot. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, we're going to talk about how I woke up this morning and I'm watching the news and I feel like I'm back in the 60s with all these protests. And it looks like there's more protests planned for the summer. I mean, could this be like the summer of 68? Oh, my God, I hope not. Well, we'll talk a little bit about that. Got some new polling on the presidential race. And Paul McCartney and John Lennon's kids, McCartney and Lennon, have gotten together and they have a new song. And we're going to sample that in 3 o'clock hour. It's called Primrose Hill. It's James McCartney and Sean Lennon getting together, doing a song. And it's pretty good. So we'll sample that at 3 o'clock.
All righty, folks. Scoot's headed your way with a great lineup. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Tuesday evening. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Take care.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.